So last week we began our series on Hilchos Tefillah, and we began with an introductory shiur about, number one, how Tefillah should become the focal point, the most important part of our day, and how we should base our day around all of our attention that we give to Tefillah. Number two, we spoke last week, most importantly, about what it means when we say Shomea Tefillah. We said the beautiful idea from Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Chaim Belozhiner, of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that he said that when we say Shomea Tefillah, we ask that the Ribono Shel Olam, although the exterior often does not look the way he expected it to look, although the way we have panned out in our lives might not be exactly the way God wanted us to, but our voices have never changed. Our voices are always the same, our voices are always committed, and therefore we ask the Ribono Shel Olam that he listen to our voices, our sweet voices that he remembers, the way he created them, that have not changed at all. We ask that he respond in kind to that. So now let's move on to our second introductory shiur. Hopefully in the future we'll get to the halacha part, but this is still a little bit more of an understanding as to what exactly we're trying to do when we daven. So Moshe Rabbeinu, in the very end of the Torah, wants very much to enter into Eretz Yisrael. And there we have in Parshas Va'eschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Va'eschanan el Hashem. The Gemara tells us that Va'eschanan is a gematria of 515, because Moshe Rabbeinu offers 515 various different prayers in order to get himself entry into Eretz Yisrael. In the end, it didn't work. In the end, he did not get in. God listened to him a little bit. He allows him to look at the land, to see it, to experience it, but he doesn't allow him to ultimately enter into the land. But what the Gemara also learns from the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu uses the word Va'eschanan el Hashem, that this word Va'eschanan is Milashon Matnas Chinam. It means that it's somewhat of a free gift, shall we say. Now, in our contemporary society, we have no concept, we have no understanding of what it means to get something that we are completely, no strings attached. I don't really think it's so easy to find an example of such a thing. Why? Take for example, let's say I'm a wealthy man, and people come to me to ask for a donation to tzedakah. You know, somebody's making a wedding, they can't afford the wedding, and they come and ask for money. So I give them the money. So that's a matnas chinam. I have nothing to do with this person. I have no relationship with them. They have no relationship with me. I'm giving a free gift. It's not something I was obligated to do. But that's not really a matnas chinam. Why? Because in our society, that person will forever be grateful, will forever be thankful to you, will forever be extremely appreciative for what you have done for them. That means that there are strings attached. It means that you get something out of what you did. And even if you say, well, the person lives on the other end of the world, at the same time, every human being, this is part of society, every human being that has the means to help others, part of the understanding of human society is that the rich help the poor, and that the ones who are privileged are able to help those who unfortunately do not have the same privileges. So therefore, it's hard for us to understand what exactly it means to have a matnas chinam. How do we approach the fact that our tefillah is referred to as a matnas chinam, something that is an absolute gift, something we are completely ineligible of being given, something that we are totally undeserving, unworthy of? What exactly does that mean in our terms? How do we understand that? So in order to gain a better appreciation for what that means, let's learn together the mashal of Reb Shimshon Pinkus. Reb Shimshon Pinkus has a sefer called Sha'arim Batfila. Now it's been translated into English as well, called Gates of Prayer. It's an unbelievable sefer. If you read Hebrew well, it's an amazing sefer to read in Hebrew. It's not so big, but it's a beautiful read. The way he wrote that sefer is very different than the other ones that were written, is because he actually wrote the Sha'arim Batfila. There are many different svarim that were written of posthumously of his ideas and his thoughts, but he wrote the original Sha'arim HaTefillah, and that's a really, really beautiful work. If you understand Hebrew well, it's something that you'll appreciate. So let's see, even if you don't understand Hebrew, it's now in English, I'm sure it's great as well, I don't know, but I would imagine. So let's learn together the way he explains, the way he describes what it means to have this feeling of a matnas chinam every time we daven. So he writes as follows, Al Echad, he gives a mashal about a person, a child, sha'avev his chased imo ma'od, that his father was so overly gracious, so forthcoming, so benevolent with his child, in an extreme way, v'hishpia alav rov tova v'ashiris mefleges, and the father showers upon him a wealth, a bounty, such opulence, such luxury, everything the kid ever wants he has. I just read an article the other day someone sent me about Donald Trump's son and why he doesn't want to move down to Washington, because it's a downgrade for him. Can you imagine? He's living on the top of Trump Towers, he has a whole penthouse to himself, he has a whole floor living by himself, and you look at the pictures of where this kid lives. It's golden ceilings and big, you know, unbelievable the way the kid lives. It's amazing. His father pampers him. His father gives him everything. So why would he want to move down to Washington, D.C.? Nebuch, he's going to have to live in the White House. It's a downgrade. So that's the mashal, that's what we're trying to describe here. You have a kid whose father gives him everything. And the father really provides him with anything he can ever want. Bishamru kol chayav mikol ra, and the father's always protecting and shielding his child that nothing should ever go wrong, no one will ever bully him, and nothing will ever happen to him. Vihine. And after all this, after all that the father, after all that the parent provides for their child, liyamim kara mikra, something happens, and va'asa mariva gedola im aviv, there's major dissonance, there's major hostility that develops between the father and his child, and they get into a major fight, and mitoch kach, and ultimately, amad ha-ben v'hargo le'aviv. So forget my example, that wasn't a good example, I didn't mean that at all. But amad ha-ben v'hargo le'aviv, the son, unfortunately, goes ahead, after all that the father has done for him, after the father has provided for him and given him the most luxurious, the most wonderful lifestyle, the child goes ahead and unfortunately murders his father. Can you imagine? That's what the child reacts, that's the response. You get in a fight with your father, hine, omid lifnei ha-shofet. So now they arrest this child, and he's due for a court date. He stands up in front of the judge, v'roehu noroz ha-maisa ha-sharasa, and he starts to understand how barbaric that act was, how serious an act he committed, how serious a crime it was. Aval al-kolpanim b'tzoros nafsho le'he'anesh b'flidim onesh chamer al-haratzicha. Maybe he doesn't fully appreciate and understand how awful the act was, but he understands that he's about to be in big trouble. He understands that he might be sitting in jail for the rest of his life. So it starts to hit. It starts to be on his consideration. And he's trying to think, how is he going to get himself out of the punishment? How is he going to be able to lighten his sentence from this judge? Mevakesh rachamim lifnei ha-shofet. V'yifterenu she'yirachem alav v'yifterenu mi'onesh. He asks the mercy of this judge that he should have some pity on him and that maybe he shouldn't put him in jail. Why? Because Nebuch, b'pnei shaharei yosem hu, I'm an orphan. Don't you feel bad for me? I don't have a father. It's just ridiculous. What kind of kid is this? He kills his father. Now the judge wants to prosecute him for what he did. And he stands up and he says, you should have rachmanis on me, you should have pity on me, you should have mercy. Why? Because I don't have a father. Well, why don't you have a father? Eza busha, eza klima, what a scandalous reaction. What a disgrace for a kid to say. What a dishonorable statement. V'harei mi asa os chali asom. Who put you in that situation? Who made you not have a father? The judge responds to him. V'chi yesh lo eza shem et schus levakesh rachmim. Do you have any right to open your mouth and to say such a thing? You want to claim that you are on medication, you want to claim that something went wrong, that whatever it was. I understand, maybe there's what to consider. But you want to claim that I should have mercy on you because you don't have a father? It's ridiculous. Says Reb Shimshon Pinkus, Zehu mashal amiti al kol sug habakasha shemevakshim anu mehakadosh baruch hu. This is what we mean when we ask every day in our davening, in our Shemona Esrei, so many various requests from our God. Kigon, for example, Parnasa, Chaim, Brius, Ushar, and Yanam HaNetzrachim Lana. We ask for so many various different requests throughout the Shemona Esrei. Shahare Miu Shema'akev Me'itanu HaTova. We ask God to give us a good Parnasa. We ask Him that He should give us Shidduch for our children. We ask all the different things. Well, who's holding that back? What's the reason why it's not there? Why do you not have a good Parnasa? Why do we have so many difficulties, he suggests. Harei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzido, from the part of God Himself, Choshek V'Chosef Tamid Laseis Rov Tovu Bracha V'Lo Gvul. God is longing, God desires to give us everything. The ultimate plan, the original plan was, you should all have wonderful lives, everything should be great. God is a Meitiv Lebruim. God is the one who is so kind and benevolent to His children. And that's all He wants, to be Meitiv to us. All He wants is to help us and to shower us with His kindness. However, Rak Ma'asenu Mekalkalim V'Horsim Ha'olam Kulo, our poor life choices that we make destroy the plan. We get in the way. It's not that God doesn't want to do it. It's that we get in the way. V'kivan Shekein, and since that is true, Eza Taina Yesh Lanu Levakesh Rachamim, on what grounds do we have to open our mouths and to ask God, please give us this? You're the reason why you don't have it. The child asked, the shofet asked the judge, have mercy on me because I don't have a father. Well, you're the reason why you don't have a father. You're the reason why you don't have a parnasa. You are the reason why this problem is befalling your family. If a person has a precarious, a dangerous situation, why are you going through this tragedy? Why are you going through this difficulty? Don't we know how many times the Torah reiterates to us, if you will follow the laws of the Torah, everything will be wonderful. I'll give the rain at the right time, and everything's going to be great, and life is going to be perfect. And if not, the Torah says, and if we don't follow what the plan was for how our lives should be lived, the Torah tells us, the opposite, unfortunately, will happen. Shalosh pa'amim bayom, three times a day, mazir osanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We say Kriya Shema every day more than once, and we are told there, Hishamri lachem pen yiftel avavchem. God warns us, don't go astray, because if you do, X, Y, and Z is going to happen. And yet, he says, V'chal azharas ha-Torah k'suva sham, and all the times that the Torah warns us, Modios lanu are there to inform us, Ma'yikreim lo nishmar ha-Torah ba'ava v'yira. How many times do we read Psukim and Chumash? How many times do we say in our tefillah? What's going to happen if a person does not follow in the laws of the Torah? But yet he writes, Velo shomim, velo nizharim. We don't hear it. We don't listen to it. We don't feel warned. It's not speaking to us. It doesn't relate to us. Velo basof, and then in the end, Kasher ba'aleinu es asher hizaronu. When everything, exactly what God warned is going to happen, when all of that begins to play out, and now we wake up and we say, how could it be we're in such a situation? How could it be I'm going through such a tragedy? How could it be this is befalling my family, my community? Then we wake up and we say, Eich efsher az lahaz meitzach ulaharam rosh levakish mehashem. How shameless we are. How brazen it is for us to stand up then, after God warned us so many times, after we ourselves said the word so many times, then we stand up and say, oh God, please save us. Please have mercy on me. After all, don't you know I'm a Yasum? And that's what he says it means to approach tefillah as a matnas chinam. That's what it means to approach the venue of our day when we offer a prayer as something we are completely undeserving of. Something we are completely unworthy of, because we brought about very often the problem upon ourselves. Now, it doesn't mean every time, the next time you see somebody who's sick, you should start pointing a finger and figuring out what they have done wrong. It means if you are the one who's sick, you should point a finger inside of yourself and try to do a cheshbon nefesh and figure out what it is that God might be trying to speak to you. It's not anyone else's job to point a finger and figure out what your problem is. It's our own individual job to figure out what our deficiencies might be. Now, there's such a concept as Yisurim Shalahava. Sometimes a person goes through a terrible difficulty for no fault of their own. For whatever reason, God wants to give them schar, whatever it might be. But in general, the clear assumption is that a person who goes through a difficulty, there's a reason for that. And we say it every day in our davening. And we say it every day in our davening. And it behooves us to make a cheshbon nefesh, to think a little bit about why we might be going through such a tragedy. What does God want to communicate to me? And quite often, says Rav Pinkus, what it means is that we have made this tragedy come upon ourselves. Not always, but sometimes. And then we turn around and we ask the Ribono Shel Olam, save me because I'm going through the tragedy? Did you forget that you're the reason for the tragedy? Did you forget that I created the world in a way that I want to be meitiv lebruai? I want to just do kindness, to show my benevolence to all of my children. And the only reason why that's not happening is because there are people who got in the way. It's not God's fault. It's our fault. That's what it means, ba'eschanan el Hashem. That's what it means to ask for a matnas chinam. We have every right to do that. As ridiculous as the mashal sounds, we are so blessed that we have the opportunity to do that. Although often it might be our own fault, but we have the opportunity regardless to ask the Ribono Shel Olam for a matnas chinam, we are completely undeserving, but you know what? We're going to ask you anyway, because we know how much you love us. Because we know how much your kindness knows no end. And that's what it means every day when we daven for this immeasurable rachmanis, for this unbelievable consideration, for this compassion that the Ribono Shel Olam is willing to shower upon us and show us, although very often we might not be worthy of accepting and getting that at all, but this is what our tefillah really represents. Yeah.
We say in davening, Ashrei Hadam Sheteyasvenu Ka'u Mitoatcha Kelamdenu Leashkivu Mimeira Adyekre L'Rasha Shachat.
Yeah.
So we pray, we praise the person that Hashem gives Yisurin to take him so that he'll learn from the Torah and it will take him away from his bad ways or his inclinations that are...
That's exactly the point. The Pesukim tell us that when we have a difficulty, when we have a personal challenge, our job is, Miterasal Talamdena, we should see an indication that there's a reason why this is happening, and it's as a result of the Torah that we might not be following exactly the way we're supposed to. That's exactly what Rav Pinkus is pointing to. Now again, it doesn't mean every time something happens to someone, it can be traced back to a particular reason or a particular fault of their own. Obviously, that's not always the case. But in general, he says, the Torah does warn us so many times that if you keep the laws of the Torah, life will be great. Life will be wonderful. So I think this is a perspective to consider what it means when we say, Va'eschanan al Hashem, what it means when we say that we ask that our tefillahs be a matnas chinam. Although we are not worthy, although we are undeserving, it's something that we ask for regardless. When we speak about the incredible effectiveness, the incredible power and potency of tefillah, there's an interesting mashal that's given by the Bali Musar, and they talk about somebody who's walking in a community and he's not familiar with this community at all. It's his first time there, and he chances upon a royal fortress, a beautiful big citadel, and he looks in and he sees that it's 18 stories high, and he sees that it's, you know, each floor probably has 100 rooms, and he looks outside and he sees that they have panoramic views of all the mountains and all the beautiful gardens outside, and it's an amazing sight. He starts to look through the windows and he sees golden staircases and marble all over the place. It's a very overwhelming kind of scene. And he finally turns to someone and he asks, who is so lucky to live in this palace? Who's there? And they start to tell him, well, the truth is, the people who live in that palace are not really those who earn the money on their own. They are just people who were born into this family. This is an estate that was given to them by their grandparents, by their great-grandparents. They were the ones who worked hard, but they gave it over to these children. And the truth is, it's so sad because this family was born in to the basement, to the dark basement. That's where they were born. And it never even dawned upon them to step outside of the dark basement. So they don't even know what is on top of them. They don't even know what's outside. They're just sitting there living their whole lives in this dark little basement downstairs because they're so caught up with everything there is to do down there. They don't even realize how rich their lifestyle would only be if they would step outside of their little enclave and see what they really have. And look up at the big building that they're living in. And appreciate all the majesty, all the beautiful royalty that they have. And only look outside to the gardens, to the golden staircases, to everything, all the treasures that are there. But they don't really understand that because they're caught up in their little basement in which they inhabit where they live. This, say the Bali Musar, is sometimes the way that Chazal look at us when we approach tefillah as well. What do we mean? What they mean by that is as follows. The Gemara says that tefillah is one of the things in our lives that is omdim berumo shel olam. It is otherworldly. It is transcendental. But b'nei adam mezalzalim bo. We don't take tefillah as seriously as we should. And that's what the Gemara in Bracha says. It's omdim berumo shel olam. It's one of those things that really is otherworldly. And we have the gift to connect with it. But b'nei adam mezalzalim bo. We don't take it as seriously as we should. We don't approach it with the sincerity that it deserves. Rab Chaim Balazhiner, one of the great Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon in the end of the 1700s, he writes in the Nefesh HaChaim, look at number Beis. Ki be'emez ba'omek pnimius kavanas ha'tfila. When you think about the depth of meaning that every word of tefillah has, eini tanu yodea adma. It's impossible for us to really understand what lays behind every word of our tefillah. Ki gam ma shenizgala lanu tzas kavanas ha'tfila me'rabuseinu harishonim zal. You know, you go out and you buy the Art Scroll Siddur with all the commentaries on the bottom, and you're underlining and you're highlighting and you make sure you understand everything that there is to know, and you're reading all the commentaries. With all that, says the Nefesh HaChaim, with all the commentaries, with all the understandings, with all that the Kaddishei Elyon Vaad Acharon, Harav HaKadosh Ish HaElokim Nora HaArizal, with all the understandings that the Arizal infuse into the tefillah, and all the mysticism, and all the everything that there could be, he says, Einam Be'erech HaFketipa Min Hayam Klal. That doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of what the deep meaning of tefillah actually is, what every word really encompasses and represents. Neged pnimis omes omek kavanas anshei kneses hagedola misaknei hatfila. The anshei kneses hagedola, the great sages, shahayu kuf chav zakenim, they were 120 great talmidei chachamim umehem kama neviim. Many of those people who instituted our tefillah in the first place were neviim. They had prophecy. And this, says the Nefesh HaChaim, is something to consider. That the power in every word of tefillah that was set up, that was instituted by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah so many years ago, is something we can never fully appreciate. This is one of the reasons they give. It's counterintuitive, it's very strange. Why is it that we have an opportunity to daven to pray every day, and yet we don't have the ability to express ourselves? I'm supposed to say the same Shemona Esrei every day? That wasn't even written by me? How can I really have any proper kavana when I don't even relate to those words, because I'm not the one who authored them? I'm not the one who put them together. I didn't structure the Shemona Esrei. If I would sit down and write my own Shemona Esrei, maybe it would be a little bit easier for me to have kavana. How often do we see people just running through it because it doesn't really mean so much to them? Ala tzaddikim, really? Ala chassidim, it makes a difference to you. Vala malshinim, who are the la malshinim that you're davening for? And let's say you don't have anyone sick in your family. What's the rifa'enu all about? The baruch aleinu, yeah, you think it's not going to rain without your davening? And sometimes we think about the Shemona Esrei and we say, we don't relate to this. Why are we saying those words? If I would structure my own Shemona Esrei, I would do it my own way. And here says the Nefesh HaChaim, no. It's a big mistake. Why is it a big mistake? Because every word that is in our Shemona Esrei has so much power, has so much intensity. Every word was infused by Nevi'im, by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, with a meaning, with an understanding that after all that you'll read, and after all that you'll highlight in your Siddur, and after all that you'll try to think about, you will never even come to a beginning of an understanding of what those words, what the power of those words really represent. That, says the Nefesh HaChaim, is what tefillah really means. It gives us a perspective on how powerful the tefillah is. Says the Gemara in Brachas Lamed Beis, look at number Gimel. Amar Belezer, you want to know how great tefillah is? Gedola tefillah yosemi masin tovim. The power that we have in our tefillah is greater than masim tovim. She'en lecha gadol b'masim tovim yosemi Moshe Rabbeinu. There was no one who excelled more in the area of masim tovim and chesed than Moshe Rabbeinu. He was so selfless. He gave himself to everybody else. He took the bullet so many times for everybody else. There was no one greater than him in the area of masim tovim and chesed. And yet, Moshe Rabbeinu, lo nena ela b'tfila. Moshe Rabbeinu was only answered not as a result of all the wonderful things that he did in his life, not because of all the chesed and all the wonderful times that he stood up and that he provided for the Jewish people, but rather Moshe Rabbeinu was saved. Moshe Rabbeinu's prayers were answered because he prayed. That's the greatest power a person can have. Not all the chesed. It's all important. But to put it in perspective, says the Gemara, the tefillah has so much more of an incredible power than any act of chesed we can ever think of doing. Based on this assumption that we have such a power of tefillah, there's a fascinating halacha. The Gemara says in Moed Katan, Daf Yud Ches, and this is also quoted in Shulchan Aruch. We have a concept that actually comes from last week's Parsha. So we have Lavan tricks his son-in-law, and he first allows his son-in-law to marry Leah. After Yaakov Avinu realizes what happened, he then goes ahead and requests that he wants to marry Rachel. So what does Lavan say? Malei Shavuazos. Let's wait out the week, and then we'll consider giving you Rachel. Why wait out the week? If I want to marry Rachel, why can't I marry her tomorrow? You made a wedding yesterday. Too bad. Make a wedding tomorrow. You gave me the wrong girl. So why does he have to wait a week? So Rashi writes on Chumash, Shever Brachas. You have to wait till Shever Brachas is over. Now I'll ask you, why wait till Shever Brachas is over? Why waste money and make another wedding, pay for a second wedding? Why not one night of Shever Brachas when you're having a party anyway? Why not have that number one as the Shever Brachas, number two as the wedding for Rachel? So from here we derive a principle in halacha, which is Eima arvin simcha b'simcha. You can't mix up too many exciting occasions and do them all at the same time. You have to give each one their attention that they deserve. And therefore, Leah is the one who just got married. She's the one who's entitled to have a Sheva Brachas. We're going to do 7 days of Sheva Brachas for her. Only after she's done, we're going to go ahead and do the wedding for Rachel, and she'll have her time to do her own Sheva Brachas. That's the halacha. And based on that, we assume, Ein nosim nashim b'moed. You're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. Wouldn't that be a nice time? People are all from work, the families are all together anyway, everybody's flying in from other countries, it's a great time to do a wedding. No, you're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. What? Because you're supposed to focus your attention on being excited about the Yom Tov, and therefore if you're going to go and divert your attention to now get into the mood of a chasana, of a wedding, it's going to take away Eima arvin simcha b'simcha. Yet the halacha is, you're allowed to get engaged on Chol HaMoed. Why? Isn't engagement also an exciting time? So you'll say it's not as exciting as the wedding. True. But isn't engagement also a very exciting time? We finally went out enough. We went on a date enough. We realized time for us to get married. We're a good shidduch, a good match. We're allowed to get engaged on Chol HaMoed. That's a very exciting time. Why can't I have a vorta l'chaim on Chol HaMoed? Isn't that also a violation of the principle of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha? Listen what the Gemara says. Well, you better do it, because if you went out with this girl, you went out with this guy, and now you think it's the right time, you better do it fast before someone else gets her. Shema Yikal Menu Acher, says the Gemara. Maybe somebody else is going to quickly start going out with the girl. You were eating out in the coffee shop the night before. You were in the restaurant. There's another guy sitting at the other table. He starts looking over. He sees, oh, maybe it's a good idea for me. Better get get a move on it. And guess what? Now this guy, I have another week, because now he's stuck with Yom Tov. So I'm going to start going out with her over Chol HaMoed, because I know he can't get engaged. She's going to like me, and then that's going to be the end of him. That's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara answers, really? Don't we believe in a shirt? Don't we believe that everything is predetermined, everything is predestined? Really, do you think just because you wait another week, somebody else who was sitting in the restaurant the night before is now going to start going out with the girl because I have another week, and they're going to end up getting married to her instead of you? How can that be? You know what the Gemara answers? Yes, it's true that we believe in a basher. Yes, it's true that we believe that everything is predetermined and predestined, and who you're going to marry and what's going to be and how it's going to play out. But, says the Gemara, Shema yikadmenu acher birachamim. Shema yikadmenu acher birachamim, says the Gemara. Maybe that guy who was sitting at the other table is going to start davening. And he's going to daven really hard, because he really wants to marry this girl. And that tefillah is going to take away your basher. That tefillah has the power to take away who was predetermined, who was predestined to be married to you. Now, it's a frightening statement. And somebody said last night, well, why is the girl at fault? Just because this guy decided to daven, she likes the other guy. So obviously, Tzadik v'yashar Hashem, obviously the Ribbono Shel Olam makes a cheshbon and he figures out that life should be wonderful for all of them. But it's a frightening statement. Shema yikadmenu acher berachamim. You're going out with the girl for 6 months already. You know you're getting engaged, waiting till the after Yom Tov, because you want to make the l'chaim after Yom Tov is over. You don't want to mix all the exciting times. Maybe some guy along the way is going to put his eyes on that girl and say, you know what, I better daven because I want to marry her. And I'm running out of time, because this guy is going to marry her instead of me. And the Gemara says that that can work. And that's the reason why, although we have a principle of Eima Arvin Simcha B'Simcha, the Gemara says this is the exception. One is allowed to get engaged, because we're concerned that somebody else might daven in the interim and take away that girl that you wanted to get engaged to. Now, the assumption is once you get engaged, no one's going to take away the girl from getting married to you. That's already too late. But the engagement is what seals it, is what seals the deal. And that's the Gemara's assumption. So people were very nervous last night. Well, what's with the bashert? Like, you know, how do you deal with the bashert? That was on a lot of people's minds. So I mentioned last night, my father has said many times in the past from the Meiri, that the Gemara says that there is a concept of a bashert, and that a baskol goes out and assures everybody that you're going to marry this person and that person. So the Meiri has a comment that the only time that that was the case was when people used to get married at 3 or 5 or 6 years old, when they really didn't have an understanding as to whether this person is really compatible, whether this person is the right person for me, whether we really are a good match. It was hard to know. You're only 5 or 6 years old, and the girl is probably only 2 or 3. So how are you really supposed to know? You can't really go on a date and talk about anything substantive. You don't really know if you share common values, common goals. So that's when we believed it was a basher. The Ribbono Shel Olam had to get involved and set everything up. But nowadays, says the Meiri, nowadays where we get married at an age when we are somewhat mature, when we have already made decisions on our own of how our lives should play out, and we've already made choices in our lives of how exactly we want to live and what exactly we want to do, and which business we should go into and which profession we should be in. Well, there says the Meiri, you made the choices. Well, you're going to make the choice also for who you're going to marry. God's not going to get involved. God's not going to get involved at that point. Now it's your choice. Sometimes, unfortunately, people make the wrong choice. But the Meiri writes that this whole concept of a basher, again, it's an interesting thought. He says the whole concept of a basher perhaps only was when people used to get married. Yitzchak and Rivka. How old was Rivka at the time they got married? A little kid. How do they know it was really for her? Mashem Yatza Adavar. Everything was from the Ribbono Shel Olam. He set it up. He had to set it up. Otherwise, how could we know that Rivka was really predestined for Yitzchak? It was impossible. Can't really meet her. You can't really understand what she's all about. But says the Meiri, perhaps now that we get married as adults, that we date as adults, that we make decisions and choices on our own in every other area of our life, maybe that's the same when it comes to a shidduch as well, when it comes to a wedding, when it comes to a marriage. That a person as an adult has to make their own choices. Either way, this Gemara seems to say clearly that that predetermined, that predestined shidduch can be lost as a result of somebody else's tefillah. Look at the pasuk in Parsha Shmini. We have in Parsha Shmini the unfortunate death of Nadav and Avihu. Those are the two children of Aaron HaKohen. So the pasuk says, "Vayidaber Moshe al Aaron ve'al Elazar ve'eli Samar banav hanosarim." Moshe Rabbeinu goes ahead and speaks to Aaron, his brother, and to Elazar and Isamar, who were the banav hanosarim, who were the remaining sons. Now, obviously, you're not going to talk to the dead sons who were just killed. So what does it mean, banav hanosarim? Obviously, if you're talking to Aaron HaKohen and Elazar and Isamar, it means you're talking to the two children who were spared, to the two children who did not lose their lives. That's pretty intuitive. That's pretty clear. So what does the Torah mean to indicate when it says, banav hanosarim? What does that add? What meaning does that add for us? Says Rashi, you know what it means? Hanosarim min hamisa. Moshe Rabbeinu addressed the two children of Aaron who didn't lose their lives, who weren't killed. Yeah, that we know. Melamed, says Rashi, teaches you, Sha'af aleim niknasa misa alavana egel. The plan was for them to die also. For Elazar and Isamar, also to lose their lives. Aaron HaKohen was supposed to lose all four of his children in one day. However, what happened? Tfilaso shel Moshe bit lamechza. The plan was all four children of Aaron are going to die. But you know what? Moshe Rabbeinu intervened. What did he do? Moshe Rabbeinu prays on behalf of the other two children. He says, God, how can you wipe out the whole family of Aaron? How can you kill all four of his children? And therefore, says Rashi, bit lamechza. Half of the decree on the family of Aaron HaKohen was rescinded. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Espalel gam ba'ad Aaron ba'esahi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I offered a tefillah on behalf of Aaron at that time that his other two children should not be taken, that their lives should not be lost, and his tefillah worked. And that's what it means that he addresses Elazar and Isamar banav hanosarim. Those were the children that were alive only because of him. Only because of what he did. Only because he stepped in and he got involved. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here either. Rabbeinu Bechaya, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, one of the Spanish Sfardische Rishonim, lived in the 1200s. Rabbeinu Bechaya was one of the foremost Talmidim of the Rashba. Rabbeinu Bechaya has in his commentary on Chumash, just to give us a perspective of what the power of tefillah is and how often we go through our tefillah and we don't even think about it. So again, some of us don't have the time. But those of us who do have the time, just to give a little bit of thought, to give a little bit of attention and concentration, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, Sarech atel adas, this is the bottom of the page, number hey. A person has to know, ki koach hatfila gadol afilu lishanos hateva. The power of tefillah is such that it can change, it can alter the course of nature. Number two, says Rabbeinu Bechaya, lihi natzal min asakana. It can save a person from a dangerous situation or predicament. Number three, he writes, Livatel HaNigzer. It can get rid of something that God already has decreed on a person. And he goes on to prove all three of them. L'shanos HaTeva, how do we know that it can actually change nature? Mi Yitzchak, Shanemer, because the Pasuk says, by Yitzchak, Vayetar Yitzchak LaHashem L'nochach Ishto. The Gemara tells us, Yitzchak Avinu Davins, but his wife, Ein La Beis Rechem, she had no womb, she had no ability to become pregnant, she had no ability to carry a child, it just wasn't possible. I don't know what you call that, medically. But she had no ability. What's he davening for? But yet it worked. Because tefillah has the ability, L'shanos Es HaTeva. Naturally, it's impossible that Rivka can have a child. It's the way she was created. But her nature was changed. The ability was given to her after the tefillah of her husband Yitzchak. Number two, he writes, L'hinatzel min ha-sakana. How do we find that a person can save themselves from a dangerous predicament? Mimasha kasa, because the pasuk said, Yorde hayamba anios. There were those people who were going out on the boats, on the rowboats. Vayamar, vayamod ruach sa'ara. Vateromim galav. There was a big storm. And all of a sudden, these fierce waves start to capsize the ship. Yalu shamayim, yorde tohamos. Obviously, this is just a mashal, but it means people are being thrown about up and down all over the place, and the ship is being thrown around by these waves. Nafsham barot ismogig. Everybody's afraid for their lives. Vayitzeku al Hashem betzalem, they all unite together in prayer. Uksiv basrei, and it says after that, Yakom sa'ara l'demama vayachashu galehem. The storm settles down. The boat is sailing again. Everybody's lives are saved. Because tefillah has the ability to save someone from a dangerous situation. And number three, listen to this. Levatel ha'nigzer. You know, sometimes we think, God gave me such a bad mazel. Some people, unfortunately, you see them, just everything goes wrong. You know, I was just in Eretz Yisrael last week. It was unbelievable. So in the community of Talmon, that was one of the communities that had a fire. And there was a woman in that community whose house burnt down to the ground. Now, this woman has a twin sister who lives in Neve Tzuf, who came on Thursday. Her sister's house got burned down on Wednesday night. She came on Thursday with all her children to help her sister out, to figure out what they're going to do with the kids and what they could salvage, they can have. Anyway, they spent 2 days together. The sister was helping her out with all of her kids and with everything. Shabbos, the sister goes back to Neve Tzuf, the twin sister, and her house burns down to the ground. What are the odds? What are the chances? Two twin sisters who are best of friends in two different communities just so happens to be that both of their houses are going to burn down? You say to yourself, what kind of mazel do these people have? How could it be? Of all the places? What's the probability? What God is trying to teach them is not our business. It's their business. But there are some people who see that they have something that was nigzar on them. There was a gzera given to them. We don't understand why. And it frightens us. Because sometimes that's us. But it shouldn't, says Rabbeinu Bechaya. You know why? Because there's an answer. Michizkiah. And he proves it from the story of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Shehosif lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu chamesh esrei shana b'koach ha-tfilah. Do you know that Yeshaya HaNavi walks into the home of Chizkiyahu HaMelech and he says, Meis ata v'lo techaya. Imagine if a Navi walked into your house, God forbid. Imagine you have somebody, the stature of Yeshaya HaNavi, he walks in and he says, Meis ata v'lo techaya. You're going to die and you're not going to outlive the day today. Why? I don't know. But if that's what the Navi says, I would quickly gather my family, I would do everything I have to do. What else can I do? Didn't have kids at the point. Correct. But you would do whatever you wanted to do in your last day. The Navi tells you, you're going to die. But Chizkiyo tells him, Kalei nivuos chavitzei! Get out of my house! I don't want to hear from you! What do you mean you don't want to hear from me? I'm Yeshaya HaNavi. You don't believe it? You believed everything else I said. Everything else I ever prophesied came true. So what do you mean? Chizkiyo insists, get out of my house. Kalei nevuas chavetzei. Take your nevuah, take yourself, and get out of here. Why? He writes, because, kach mekublani bibeis abi abba, that a person always has the ability to daven. You say, God decreed on me I'm going to die? I don't care what you say. Because I have a way of intervening. I have a way of changing the plan. You say God made a gzeira on me, a difficult one. Guess what? I'm going to get involved and I'll show you that it's not going to happen. And in the end, God adds on another 15 years to the life of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. 15 years as a result of his tefillah. Look at the last line that he has here. Hodienu b'kan. It's on the other side of the page. Last few words. Hodienu b'kan. Here the Navi comes to teach us. Shahatfila lemala min hanevuah. That our prayer, that our tefillah is more powerful, is more potent, is more effective than prophecy. You think about what's the pinnacle of spiritual existence is to be a Navi. What's the apex? What can be greater than Ruach HaKodesh, than having Nevuah? You know what's greater? Tefillah. Tefillah that we have the chance to daven every day has more power than even the Navi Yeshaya. The Navi Yeshaya can come to Chizkiyahu HaMelech and tell him, Meis ata v'lo techaya, and Chizkiyahu can say back to him, Kalei nevuascha v'tzeh. I'm not interested. I don't want to hear it because it's not going to be. I'll petition God. And we're going to change that nevuah. It's not going to happen. You know, Rashi writes on Chumash, there are three times, it's a questionable Rashi because really there are four times, but Rashi writes in the name of the Medrash that there are three times that the Torah uses the phrase, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. And in all three of those places, the Medrash writes, they mean the same thing. So the first time is by the Mabul, when Noach is going into the Teva. And Noach was facing all the critics and adversaries, and everybody was upset. What do you mean? The world is going to be destroyed. You're going to be the only one who's going to be saved. They were all upset at him. They decided, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make a human blockade. We're going to stand in the way. We're not going to let him go into the Teva. Well, if Noach doesn't make it into the Teva, God can't destroy the world. And God comes along and he says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. I'm going to bring Noach into the Teva in broad daylight. I'm not going to sneak him in. I'm going to suspend your human ability to get in the way of Noach going into the Teva. Okay. That's what happens. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, says the Pasuk, Ba Noach el HaTeva. Noach walks in, broad daylight, puts his ramp up, walks up to the Teva. Everybody's watching. Nobody can do anything. Says the Medrash, number two, on the occasion of Yetzias Mitzrayim. What happened by Yetzias Mitzrayim? Well, the Egyptians begin to realize that they're about to lose their slaves. The Jewish people are finally going free. And they said, you know what? We're not going to let this happen. We're going to put up an army. We're going to stop them from leaving. They think the Exodus has come. Not happening. Power starts to galvanize an army and everyone's getting together and they're going to chase after the Jews. And God says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. On this day in broad daylight, I'm not going to sneak them out when you're not watching. In broad daylight, I'm going to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, whether you like it or not. I'm going to suspend your natural, your human ability to get in the way. It's not going to happen. And that's what the Torah tells us. Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, in broad daylight, the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim. And what's the third time? By the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. By the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says, God takes the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. Sir Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the Rosh Hashiva in the Mir, once told me the following. It's very nice. Those first two occasions make sense. How does that fit into the third case? I'm going to take Moshe Rabbeinu's life, whether you like it or not, in broad daylight. How is that synonymous to the other two cases? How does that connect? By the first case, by Noach, you can have a human effort to get in the way. You can stand, you can make a blockade. And God says, I'm not going to let you do that. By Mitzrayim, they can go and fight the Jewish people. Don't let them leave. And God says, you're not going to be able to do that. What does God mean when he says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, I'm going to take Moshe Rabbeinu's life away? If it's time for someone to die, they're going to die, whether you like it or not. You can have all the doctors, all the nurses, all the medical professionals, all the medical research. Nothing's going to help. You know what the answer is, says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz? The Jewish people had one tool in the arsenal, and that was tefillah. If only they would have stood up and petitioned God, Moshe Rabbeinu never would have died. Moshe Rabbeinu never would have lost his life if only the Jewish people had the ability to pray on his behalf. And God said, you know what? I have decided it's time for Moshe to die. and I'm going to suspend your ability to get in the way of that plan. Because had I not done so, your tefillah would have worked. Had I not done that, had God not taken away our ability to daven on behalf of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu would not have died. And just as natural as it is for people to stand in the way of Noach from going in a teva and God has to stop them, just as natural as it is for the Mitzrayim, for the Egyptians to stand in the way of the Jewish people and God had to get in their way, so too it is just as natural for us to petition for someone not to lose their life, and without God getting in the way, it actually would work. You see the unbelievable potency, the effectiveness of tefillah. You see what it can do. And b'nei adam mezalzelim bo. The Gemara says, we don't appreciate what it is that we have the opportunity to do every day. It is said about the first Sanza Rebbe, the Divrei Chaim, every day before he went out to daven in the shul with everybody else, he would offer a precursory tefillah in his office. What did he say? He used to say the following: Yihi ratzon, may be your will, ezke lechavin b'tfilasi. May it be your will that I have the ability to be mechavin b'tfilasi. It doesn't happen by itself. Unless we exert energy and effort into understanding the power of the tefillah, into understanding the words, into having kavanah, it's not going to happen by itself. He offered a tefillah that God should give him the strength, lechavin b'tfilasi, and then he said, ulaharich es kocho hagadol. May I have the fortitude to appreciate and understand the indescribable power that my tefillah is about to have. That's what he offered every day before he went out to daven. Because if a person doesn't understand the power that their tefillah has, if a person doesn't understand the words that they're saying, if we don't understand what we are engaging in and how potent it is, then we'll not get as much as we should out of it. And this is why it's important to think every once in a while about what the tefillah means to us, what we expect to get from it, what do we want God to hear in the words that we're saying, and how much it is that we can get from these experiences of tefillah that we have every day in our lives. The pasuk says in this week's parsha that tefillah is referred to as charbi uvekashti. Tefillah is referred to by two different phrases, by two different verbs, and one is cherev, means a sword, and kashti means an arrow. So tefillah, prayer, is referred to a bow and an arrow. So tefillah is referred to as a sword and a bow and arrow. Why are those two descriptions used? So the Brisker Rav suggests the following. The Brisker Rav suggested that there's a major difference between a bow and arrow and a sword. A sword is very sharp and destructive on its own. Even if a young child walks around with a very sharp knife or a sword, they're going to hurt someone. They might not have the ability to really stab someone with a lot of strength, but if you have something of that nature, it can hurt someone without even having any intent to do so. A young child walks around with a sharp sword or a sharp knife, it's going to hurt somebody who they bump into. On the other hand, if you have a bow and arrow, that's not destructive, that's not going to do anything unless you have the power behind it to pull it back. If a young child walks around with a bow or an arrow, nothing's going to happen. No one's going to get hurt. And that, said the Brisker Rav, is the two types of tefillah that we have. He said we have the tefillah that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola instituted for us, the Shmona Esrei, in a very general sense. The tefillah that we have, that structure, that we open the Siddur, we see every day what it is, we read the same words. That is the power to have destruction, even if you're not having kavana. That's like the sword, because it has so much power latent within it. Without you even getting involved, just saying those words alone has such, so to speak, destructive power, because it has the power of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola who infused it with so much energy. That's one kind of tefillah. That's the cherev. That's the sword. But then he writes, we have a second kind of tefillah. And the second kind of tefillah is when I have a personal need. When I have something that's not just the general structure of the tefillah that we find in every Siddur, but it's something that I need for my own family, for my own life, for myself. And that's the tefillah that we refer to as the bakasha, but that's referred to as the keshes. That is the bow and arrow. Because dependent on how much you invest in such a tefillah will be the outcome. dependent on how much you pull back, on how strong you are, on how good a warrior you are, that's how much God will consider what it is that you're saying and asking for. So although tefillah is very important, although it is very powerful, it depends what kind of tefillah. We're lucky that we daven the regular general Shemoneh Esrei every day, and just by saying the words alone, it has, so to speak, destructive powers. But very often we find ourselves in a situation where we need to pray for something more specific, more particular. Something that applies to us more so than to others. And in a case like that, we're told that a person has to galvanize all that they have and put it all in. Because based on the amount that we invest in such an offering, in such a tefillah, in such a prayer, is the amount that it will have the power to go forward and to pierce the heavens. That tefillah is referred to as a keshes, as a bow and arrow. I see we're running out of time, so let's just close with one final thought. You know, every so often we have a situation where, either individually or as a community, we offer tefillos incessantly for something to happen. We want a particular outcome. I was a young child in 1994, but I will never forget the story of Nachshon Waxman. And I'm sure many people in the room know exactly what I'm talking about. And Nachshon Waxman was, unfortunately, the soldier who was abducted. He was later murdered. Not sure if it was a failed attempt by the Shabak, not clear exactly what happened, but either way, they murdered him literally a minute or two before the Israeli soldiers came in to get him back. And they asked, and that was a time when the Jewish people united in prayer. They said it was unprecedented. They had prayer rallies all over the world. And they asked the father of Nachshon Waxman, after this happened, they asked Yehuda Waxman, so what happened to all those prayers? What happened to all those prayers? Do you still believe in God? And Yehuda Waxman had the strength to say, well, when we pray and we ask for something, it's like a child who asks the parent for something. Does a parent always say yes? Sometimes a parent has to say no. And it's in the best of the interests of the children that the parents say no every so often. Said Yehuda Waxman, that's what I felt now as well. We have a right to ask, and God has a right to say no. Now, I don't know that most of us would have such a reaction. And we should never be tested. We should never have such a situation like that. But the problem is for all of us, so now what? So what happened to all those tefillahs? So God said no. So it was just a waste of time? Where did all those tefillahs go? We wasted all the Jewish people's time? You know, when the three boys were captured 2 summers ago, or almost 3 summers ago already, so everybody was working on the assumption that they were alive. And we davened all along that they should come back safely. It turned out they were killed on the first day. They were killed and buried on the first day after they were abducted. So what happened? We had the Jewish people going, praying, davening, beseeching, asking for 18 days. And it turned out it was all a waste of time. They weren't alive. What were we davening for? If they would have been killed the last day, you can say, we were davening for their well-being. They shouldn't be tortured. They shouldn't be this. They shouldn't be that. But they weren't. They were killed right away and buried right away. In fact, there was a major halachic shaila after the first yard site. On the first yard site, they consulted with us to ask when they should observe the yard site. Because there's a major question when a person passes away on one day and the burial happens another day, which day do you observe the yard site? But here, they passed away and were buried on the same day, but it wasn't a Jewish burial. It was an Arab burial. It was not a Kever Yisrael. It wasn't until 3 weeks later that they were brought to a Kever Yisrael. So this was a major halachic question that came up at the time, when exactly they should observe the yard site. Should it be on the day that they were killed or the day that they were brought to Kever Yisrael? But what happened to all those prayers that we offered? So the Dubna Magid deals with the issue. Many Svarim deal with the issue, but I think the way he plays it out for us is very meaningful. Says the Dubna Magid as follows. When Sodom and Amorah were about to be destroyed, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following. Look at number Zayin. V'Hashem Amar. God says to himself, so to speak, HaMechasa Ani Me'Avram Asher Ani Oseh. Can I not inform Avram Avinu about that which I'm about to do? I'm about to destroy 2 cities, Sodom and Amorah. I'm going to withhold that information from Avram Avinu. I'm not going to share it with him. And the end of the pasuk says, "Va'Avram hayo yihiye goy gadol." After all, Avram Avinu is going to grow to be a great nation. So the Dibna Magid is confused. What do those two fragments of the pasuk have any connection to one another? God says to himself, I'm about to destroy a city, a major city. Can I withhold that information from Avram Avinu? After all, he's going to be the father of a great nation. And therefore? And therefore what? Therefore you should tell him? Just because he's going to be the father of a great nation? Why does that have any reason to connect with the fact that therefore you should tell him about the destruction of Sodom and Amorah that's about to take place? Very simple question. Listen to the interpretation of the Dibna Magid. It's so brilliant. Mashal Abay Sochem, he says, this is reminding him of two merchants. Shahyunosim Bederech Al Odas Mesharim. They're going on a business venture together. Echad Hayetzar Verach Bashanim. One of these merchants was a very young man. Hasheni, and the second one was Seva Zarkabo Baba Yamim. He was an older gentleman. And the two of them are going together on the road to go on their business trip. Vahaya Bavam Le'ir Gedolot is when they reach the big city. Roch Hanuyos Mochros Begadim Larov. They see that there's a store, there's a factory that's selling all these beautiful articles of clothing. Amar Hazakin, the older man, says to himself, Ma Me'od Kolsa Nafshi, how much I love Liknos Libnai Ben Zekunim. Eze Beged Na Umishubach, how I would love to purchase one of these beautiful articles of clothing that I see in the store. I only have one young child. He would love it if I came home from the trip with a new suit for him, with a new coat, fancy earmuffs, whatever it was going to be. My son would love it. Aval Yaresi, he says, but I'm concerned. I'm going to pay all this money. I'm going to buy this beautiful suit, this beautiful coat. Pen lo yizdamin kimidaso. I didn't measure him before I left. I don't know his size. So I can't really take the bet and buy something for him. After all, it's not going to fit him. There's no return policy. What am I going to do? I'm going to waste all this money. Amar Hasheni, the second younger man, walks into the store and he says, wow, look at all these articles of clothing. Amazing. And he goes up to the salesman and he says, Ani ekach beis v'gimelmehem, I'll take two of these suits and three of those coats and four of those hats and six of those earmuffs. And he takes a whole group of everything and he pays a fortune of money. And the older man is looking at him. Amar lo hazakein, did you measure your children before you left? Do you know what everybody needs? Ma tase, what are you going to do? Lo yum mechsham levanecha, what are you going to do if when you get home, none of these fit your kids? Why are you spending all this money? Amar lo, he says back to him, Ata la asher ein lecha kiim haben zekunim, you, the old man, who only has one young son at home, and that's it. Hatzedek itcha kiim hashachta yadcha milikos. It makes sense for you to hold back from buying these clothing. Because after all, you only have one child at home. If it doesn't fit him, it was a waste of money. However, he says, Lo chein ani, that's not the case with me. Ki chanani elokim bekama yeladim. I have a bunch of little kids running around at home. And he says, Tzair v'rav gam tzair anochi liyamim. I'm a young man, I'm going to have more children. And soon we're going to start having grandchildren. And therefore he says, Lo yichsha la'echad, if it's not going to fit one of the kids now, Yuchsha l'sheni, it will fit another kid in the future, or it will fit them when they grow up a little bit. O the habanim asher yivaldu, or maybe for the kids that we will have in the coming years. My situation is not at all like yours, says the Dibna Magid. He now understands what this pasuk means. V'hanimshal, ki kol asher pa'al yizbarach es Avram Avinu alav hashalom. All that Avram Avinu was able to accomplish in those prayers that he offered on behalf of Sodom and Amorah that they should not be destroyed. Well, in the end, God said no. In the end, Yehuda Waxman comes along and says, a father has the right to say no. And that's what God says to Avram Avinu as well. You're praying that Sodom and Amorah should be saved? Guess what? The answer is no. I want to destroy those cities. However, all that he accomplished with those tefillos was Shamar L'Doros Habayim Acharav. All of that is on reserve. All of that was stored away for future generations. Val came. Therefore, says the Dubna Magid, Birtsoso Yizbarach Lishboch al Sodom Solela, when God wanted to destroy, to eradicate the city of Sodom, Amar, he says to himself, HaMechasa Anime Avram, am I going to withhold this information? This is an opportunity. Avram Avinu has the chance now to daven on behalf of Sodom, even though I know it's not going to work. But I'm giving him the chance to dive in a heartfelt tefillah, and you know what? We're going to store those tefillos. God says, even though I know that they're not going to help. Even though I know from the outset the city is going to be destroyed, how can I withhold this opportunity from Avraham Avinu to offer a prayer? After all, the pasuk says, "Hayo yihiyeh legoy gadol." He's going to have so many children later on. He's going to be the father of a great nation. They need his prayers. And if it's not going to work for now to save Sodom and Amorah, it's going to work later on. It's going to fit one of the kids in the future. That coat that I'm spending all this money on might not be matim. It might not be the right size for somebody in my family right now. But who knows? Avraham Avinu offers those prayers on behalf of Sodom and Amorah, and they're put in the bank. Because hayo yihiyeh legoy gadol. Because in future generations, later on in history, his children are going to need those prayers. And they're going to do tremendous things on behalf of his children. And that's the perspective that the Dubna Magid and so many others give us. When we often go through this difficult challenge, when we daven for something, we have somebody who's sick in the family and we daven and they don't make it. What happens? Why that person lost their life, we have no idea. Ein sur kelokeinu. Tziduk hadin, we understand the Ribbono Shel Olam has his own ideas of why such things happen. But what happens to all that we offered? What happens, all those 18 days of davening, the Jewish people all over the world, what happened to all those prayers? You know what happened? Maybe that's the reason why thousands of rockets fell the next week and nobody was killed. You ever heard of such a thing? How many rockets could fall in a community and people are still living there? And somehow nothing ever happens. Who knows? Who knows? How many people watched this week the video of the cloud? People saw that? If you didn't see it, not the ladder. No. There was a video of the ladder was, I don't know what that was, but I'm not sure. I got too many of those emails. But there was an unbelievable video that went around this week, and it was it could not have been fake, because you see people in the background who are also taking videos of the same thing. On the Gaza, not on the Gaza border, on the Syrian border, up by the Golan, so that's where the ISIS fighters last week started to attack Israeli soil the first time. Now you see, I know this for a fact, my sister lives in the Golan and Hisbin, so she sees it and she hears it. There is a video of a protective cloud that stands only over the border into the Israeli territory. It is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It's unbelievable. It stands over the border, not before and not after. It's just over the border, a big cloud. Like the Anani HaKava. Where does that come from? I have no idea. But maybe those tefillos for Nachshon Waxman are the reason for that protective cloud so many years later. Who knows? Says the Dubna Magid, if a person believes, if a person remembers, Hayo yihiyeh legoy gadol, you will be a great nation. There are going to be many generations that will come after you as well. We're not going to be here forever, we all know that. But if you always keep that in mind, then you know that no tefillah ever goes to waste. How many times did the Chafetz Chaim say about himself, and this is written in every biography of the Chafetz Chaim, that the reason why he became the Chafetz Chaim is because of the tears that his mother cried when she lit the Shabbos candles every week. That all she wanted was that her child should be a Talmud Chacham, should be a Tzaddik, and look what happened. Did it help the Chafetz Chaim's mother who didn't even live to see it? No. But look what happened generations later. Look what the Chafetz Chaim left over for us as a result of just his mother's tears. That's what it means. Yo yihiyeh legoy gadol. Don't ever forget that you will always be a great nation. You will always be a great people. We will never be here forever. It's not going to happen. Everybody has their time. But every opportunity that we have to offer a tefillah is something that will be stored away, that will be put on reserve for our future generations to take advantage of and to make use of. So, Mirtz Hashem, next week we will...